Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Ask D. Mays in 30 minutes, so get those questions in for Derek Mason. But before we get to that, I want to get into our Titans State of the Union, Titans report card, Titans evaluation, whatever you want to call it. But I think it's only fair, as we discuss some big decisions that the Titans have to make here in a few weeks. Of course, by this weekend, then Atlanta, and then the trade deadline. We've talked about what should the Titans do, what do we think the Titans could get at the trade deadline. Do you move on from Tannehill? If the Patriots want to trade Mike Vrabel for a first and a third, would you do it? They've done a lot of putting Mike Vrabel under the microscope, rightfully so. Because I don't think that you can lose 11 of your last 13 games as a head coach and not be put under the microscope. Mm-hmm. But part of an evaluation of Mike Vrabel that I think is only fair is an evaluation of the coordinators. And I want to look into both Tim Kelly and into Shane Bowen. But there was one text that I can't ignore that I think we need to start on. And one texter texts in and says, Todd Downing knew how to use Derrick Henry and score touchdowns in the red zone. It may not have been sexy, but it was effective. Titans football is smash mouth, and Tim Kelly is trying to be finesse. So we're at the point in the season where Todd Downing, who just, like, I don't even know how the words to say to evaluate Todd Downing's offensive coordinating of the Tennessee Titans over the past 2 years. I mean, this team was one of the worst offenses in the National Football League. We're at the point in the season at 2-4 where we're ready to bring back Todd Downing, because whatever Tim Kelly is doing just isn't quite good enough. So my question for you two is, through six games, what's your evaluation of Tim Kelly? Is this team better with Tim Kelly?
Oh, man. Well, I understand what the texter is saying, because this was a team that was, for some strange reason, good. And they were horrible in the second half, but they were good in the red zone for whatever reason. I mean, could be the effects of Derrick Henry. Yeah, it could be the effects of Derrick Henry having A.J. Brown, you know, having Corey, you know, just more playmakers outside, young playmakers that they can play action. And you had to be worried about them in the red zone as well as the running back. And then the offensive line may have been a little bit better. Not last year, but the year before. And even last year, the first seven games before the bottom just fell out because of injuries, the team had a winning record. And they were, in the red zone, still a good team. This season, in regards to Tim Kelly, I think he has been more creative. You know, we talk about the plays that, you know, get people wide open. Well, he's had a bunch of those. He's had a handful of those plays where guys are just running wide open. And wide open to me is, you know, a step ahead or two steps ahead of their defender. But the bad part about it is they didn't capitalize on a lot of them. So you look at and say, man.
I can think of four or five off the top of my head without even going back and
looking. So you look at it like, man, this team from an offensive standpoint, is it good? Well, no, they are. But, well, the coordinator is, but the guys are not executing. He has the perfect play at the perfect time, but this team isn't executing when they have opportunities to execute it. If I had to give them a grade after these first, you know, five games, I would say a C+ in regards to his play calling. But the facts remain, they're not averaging no more points than they averaged last year. They averaged 17 last year. They averaged 17 this year. From a run standpoint, has it gotten better? From a pass standpoint, has it gotten better? A little. A little. If you just look at the numbers, a little, yes.
Let's look at the numbers.
Let's look at the numbers. A little better.
We can go. Let's go back to 2021.
Not much. Uh-huh.
In 2021, the Titans were 24th in the league in passing yards per game. Mm-hmm. 201 passing yards per game. 2022, the Titans were 30th mm-hmm. in the league with 171 passing yards per game. This year, the Titans are 29th, 173 passing yards per game. So there really hasn't been much change.
But it's not from the lack of – it's not because the play caller. It's because of – and I believe – I mean, we're all watching the game. Mm-hmm. It's because of the execution. It's not like there hasn't been plays to be made. Like Nick Westbrook-Ikhine drops a pass mm-hmm. in the end zone. Ryan Tannehill, first game of the season, misses – four wide open guys. So the plays are there. The opportunities are there. It's just they're not capitalizing on the opportunities.
And I think that's the key. Mm-hmm. Is I have had frustrations with Tim Kelly throughout this season. Go back to the Saints game. Why is Derrick Henry on the sideline? Mm-hmm. He was running really well in the first half, and then he was on the sideline a majority of the second half. Let's go to last week against Baltimore. It's third and one at the goal line, and Derrick Henry's on the sideline. Why? Even if you don't run it with Derrick Henry, at least have him out there. At least have the threat of Derrick Henry.
I don't want to – that to me is just – that's a one-shot deal because it was the end of the game. It's hurry up. They're in catch-up mode. I see the point, right? That was – I was saying me as a fantasy owner of Derrick Henry.
Put him in there.
Hey, they're at the one. Pass interference. Put Derrick – because it's not like the clock was running, right? They could have put him in there. But he hadn't been in there. It was a two-minute drill. Mm-hmm. He tends to not be in there – in the two-minute drill. But that was a one, I don't know, I think that was a little bit of an outlier. But it is clear, as we've been talking about all year long, that they're trying to take some stuff off his plate, a little bit more less is more approach, use Spears, who's got a little more explosiveness. They're still working on that balance, I think.
So, yeah, and I have my nitpicks with Tim Kelly and some of the decisions that he's made. But also, how fair of an evaluation can we make of Tim Kelly's play calling and Tim Kelly as an offensive coordinator if, to your point, D-Mace, you're not executing some of the plays that Tim Kelly has drawn up? How much can we evaluate him with an offensive line that is horrendous?
I think the big thing that pops into my head, and the texter does hit on something that I think people may not realize. Mm-hmm. I like what I'm seeing from Tim Kelly a lot more. I see what he's trying to do. I like his feel for play calling. I think there's an improvement there. Mm-hmm. But the red zone is a huge difference. What have we been saying when everybody's like, well, the offense looks better over here? And we say, they're averaging the same amount of points as they had last year. We say, well, they're doing it different over here. Why are they doing this different? Well, it's the same as last year. They're trying to get better. But last year, they were actually 64.3% touchdown percentage in the red zone.
That's good.
They just didn't get to the red zone very
often.
That
was the problem.
But that was a strength. That was sixth in the league, mm-hmm. I think. I'm looking at NFLteamrankings.com. This year, 33%, 29th. If they were just more like last year, or let's just even say 50%, I think we might be looking at the offense a little differently. But they are
behind them.
Huh?
Who's behind them?
Behind them in the red zone.
New England?
It's teams you don't want to be associated with. The Giants, the Jets, and the Steelers of all teams are below them.
Matt Canada's offense.
Yep. How about last night? You know, the New Orleans is 28th at 37%. And last night, they have a chance to tie the game.
And they can do it.
And the guy drops the ball.
Foster Moreau can't hold on.
Perfect play call. Mm-hmm. Guy wide open. Exactly how he draw it up, but he drops the ball. So
hit his hands.
Sometimes it's not the play caller. But Mike Vrabel harps on this without people. It's one thing for a coach to have a stat put in front of him and have to answer something he really doesn't want to answer. It's another thing for him. He is bringing this up every time people are talking about the offense. We have had, I don't know what the number is now, 9-10 drives of double-digit plays getting down there and having to settle for a field goal.
Yeah.
Great if you're a Nick Folk fantasy owner. Not great if you're the Titans. It's a huge thing.
Now we need to.
Because I think they're having more trips to the red zone than last year's team did. I think. I can't prove that.
It seems like they're operating better in regards to, like, let's just say the play calling. It seems like it's better from the 20 to the 20 than it was last year.
I would agree.
But for whatever reason, when they get inside that red zone, green zone, whatever you want to call it, you know, nowadays, I think some teams call it green zone, some teams call it red zone. For some reason, they have a difficulty at scoring. Why? Because they don't have that big body guy that they depended so much on in years prior. You know, they don't have that tight end. And, you know, frankly, I'm just disappointed in Chigakonkwa. I am. But he was supposed to be one of those guys that could be a red zone threat. Treylon Burks, I'm disappointed in him because he can't stay healthy. He was supposed to be another red zone threat. When you only have, and I like Chris Moore and Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, but Nick, when you have an opportunity to score in the end zone, dude, that was
take
a catchable
that
ball. That was something that you've made harder catches in the field, you know? So I expected you to make that catch. But when you don't, it makes things equally as hard to score. Teams know, teams fear no Titan player in the red zone other than the running back. And they do what they can to take out D-Hop in the red zone. So if I take out your two best options in the red zone, the running back, which we're going to do no matter what, and then we know that your receiver can't get over the top of us, one, because he doesn't have that speed or quickness to get around anymore.
D-Hop?
Yeah, and D-Hop. But then two, more importantly, the back of the end zone is our 12th guy. So we can play it a little bit different than you know what we play in the outfield. I know, you know, when I was playing, defense called it desert, and they would once they get in that red zone, they would lock down because that to them, the back of the end zone was their 12th man. The Titans got to find a way, and it only comes if Chigakonkwa and Treylon Burks, when Treylon comes back, step up and become the player that everyone envisioned them to be. If they don't, this team will continue to have problems in the red zone. Or when Wiley come back, because I've been impressed with Wiley, the tight end. It seems like he's starting to come on.
I wouldn't hate seeing more.
Exactly. So he can be another big target in the red zone. They need young, big targets in the red zone. And right now, because of injury and because of guys are just disappointing, meaning Chig, they're not getting that. And teams are buckling down on Derrick Henry when you get in the red zone.
It's sad that when I watch Titans games, I get really nervous when they get into the red zone. Mm-hmm. I'd rather them just throw it deep from the 40. Because I know if you get in the red zone, statistics would show you're getting three more than you're getting seven. Mm-hmm. And that's a really tough position to be in. But when you get into the red zone, that's where this team struggles a lot. I mean, they struggle moving the ball downfield anyway. Mm-hmm. But against Indianapolis, I thought between the 20s, they were moving it well. Just could not get the ball in the end zone. 1-for-4 in the red zone against Baltimore. It's a problem. But is that play calling or is that personnel?
I think it's – I would think it's personnel. And I know people because I'm sitting here and I'm, you know, obviously listening to myself, but then I'm listening to you, to Caroline, and I'm thinking offensive line, that's why it's bad offense. But I'm thinking, well, offensive line was bad last year, and they still was a good red zone team. So what's the difference, you know? So to me, it's a combination of, I want to say both, but to me, he's drawing up good plays. Yeah. They just hadn't capitalized on them.
Like Indianapolis. It was the 3rd and 6 where Tajay Spears runs it for 5, and then it's 4th and 1, they go for it, you run it with Derrick Henry. And I said after that game, I think we all thought and everyone in the stadium knew what the play call was going to be. Rightfully so, because what else? You got Derrick freaking Henry, it's 4th and 1, you need to get into the end zone. So I didn't think the play call was bad, but the offensive line couldn't block. Mm-hmm. Nobody could block for Derrick Henry. He got stopped up as soon as he got the ball.
It looked like the timing was rushed. It looked like it definitely wasn't great execution. We talked about it a lot the day after. I mean, these are all things that contribute to the end results and that 33% in the red zone.
Really, I want to ask you this because you have brought this up numerous of times. Ryan Tannehill and his ability, his lack of ability to run the football now. I think that does hamper them a little bit too, what they can do in the red zone, because if you look back before the injury, he was more mobile. Even though he did score a touchdown in the red zone this year, running it.
Yeah, they
but
ran
you just don't see it. No, and it's like he really don't want to run.
It's not happening as much as it did. I think back a couple years ago when they were really rolling offensively. I can think of a number of times mm-hmm. where they ran some read option inside the 10 with Henry and Tannehill, mm-hmm. and he could hand it to Henry, he could run it in, and he could keep it and run it in. How many touchdowns did he run for? I'll look it up here in a minute. But he ran for a lot of touchdowns. They ran it once this year against Cincinnati. Touchdown.
And it worked.
Was it Cincinnati?
It was Cincinnati.
Yeah. And I haven't seen very much in the red zone, quite honestly. I do wonder about that. But now with the injury, mm-hmm. I do wonder if we're going to see it again anytime soon. And I wonder, because he had had the surgery the year before, if there was a bit of a conscious effort to not run him as much.
Probably so.
Yeah. I could see them not wanting, knowing that behind him are two young guys that are not ready to play yet. So why then would I want to continuously put my quarterback in a position where he gets outside the pocket, he's running, and he gets hit, and now he's gone for an extended amount of games, even though he's injured anyway. But I'm saying putting him outside the pocket on design runs, and then he gets hurt. Now we have no choice but to go to our backups. Maybe that could have been some of the thinking behind it. I don't know.
Wes in Clarksville, Texas, our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHandy.com, says, to me, they're changing plays when they get in the red zone. They go conservative. But so, I don't think that I can, and I'm talking about just me personally, mm-hmm. I can't criticize, I almost called him Todd Downing. Freudian slip, my goodness. Tim Kelly mm-hmm. for not running the ball and not utilizing Derrick Henry and Tajay Spears both, and then all of a sudden, well, you're too conservative in the red zone because you're just running the football. Well, what else would you do mm-hmm. in the red zone? You would run the football. I think the problem there is just the offensive line of now the backfield is taken away from you. Everybody knows what you're going to do because mm-hmm. you're one of the best running teams in the National Football League. Everyone knows what you're going to do when you need to pick up 3 yards, 2 yards, 1 yard. They just can't block.
Mm-hmm. How about this? Here's the stat. I just looked it up. 2020 and 2021, or let's even go back to 2019, the year that Tannehill joined the Titans and became the starter mm-hmm. about midway through the year. 4 touchdown runs in 2019.
From Tannehill?
From Tannehill in the 12 games. In 2020, 7 rushing touchdowns. In 2021, 7 more rushing touchdowns. Last year, only 2. This year, 1. And here, maybe even the more telling stat. Success rate. Remember the success rate mm-hmm. idea, right? It's not like Ryan Tannehill is running in 50-yard touchdowns, yeah. right? A lot of these touchdowns are somewhat near the goal line. I would venture to say the vast majority of his touchdown runs are in the red zone, right? So we're talking about how do you get it in? How did the red zone? So he was something the defense had to account for. About 66%, about 2/3 success rate as a runner in 20 and 21. One of the better, more efficient running quarterbacks in the league. Not for just total yards. I mean, just had close to 300 yards rushing each year, which is good. But that's not like Lamar Jackson yeah. or Justin Fields rushing for 1,000 yards. Different kind of running. But around the goal line, his ability to be a threat was big. But since the ankle injuries, he has not been nearly the running threat. That's a factor. Probably it's showing up in the red zone.
Probably so. When you don't have almost like now what could have been an old school triple mm-hmm. option.
Yeah, which we saw.
Tajay Spears, Derrick yeah. Henry, well, and Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, he's not doing the pitch, but it's a read option, mm-hmm.
yeah.
right?
Yeah. So overall of the discussion, mm-hmm. my point, my takeaway is, I don't think it's a fair evaluation of Tim Kelly just based off of the offensive production because of, honestly, how brutal the personnel looks at times. And I like what I've seen from Tim Kelly. I like some of the creative plays. I like the designs. It's just not executed at a very high level. Mm-hmm. And that's not Tim Kelly's fault.
No, it's not. So, you know, again, you go back to, well, you know, how do you sort of slice the pie? I think the personnel has more to do with it than the actual play caller in this situation because You had opportunities, a lot of them, frankly, and you just hadn't capitalized on them.
Let's get into questions for D. Mays coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you want to participate in Ask D. Mays, Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, make your silly underdog picks for your chance to win weekly prizes. You can play at thegamenashville.com or the 1025 The Game app as we approach week 8 of college football and week 7 of the NFL. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket.
G-Mace. He played 15 years in the NFL.
A quick throw. Touchdown, Derek Mason.
He had over 12,000 receiving yards.
Midfield, and there he goes. 80 yards for the touchdown.
And now you can ask him anything. Have a question about football or life? Now's your time to ask D-Mace.
We'll welcome you in.
Now on Caroline, Willie, and
D-Mace.
On 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Ask D-Mace is brought to you by Calabria Pizza. Come try their pizza in Goodlettsville and Mount Juliet because life is too short to eat bad pizza. Get those questions in for Derek Mason. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. And the best question for D-Mays will win a pair of tickets to see the Predators take on the San Jose Sharks on Saturday. So let's get into it. Chris is on the line with a question for D-Mays about Tim Kelly. What's up, Chris?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
Doing good.
This is the same Chris that calls you about the jersey sometimes. Mm-hmm. I call fairly often. Anyway, I think that Tim Kelly has done a fantastic job calling plays this year. He's a big step up from Downey. And like you guys were saying earlier, the execution, I feel like, is the problem, right? I've seen him call some of these flea flickers and reverses and some of these deep passes downfield, and they all seem to come at the right time. But the execution isn't there. And this might be a redundant thing that you hear, Mr. D-Mace, and I don't want to give a rhetorical question, but I guess, I mean, again, do you think that Tim Kelly is doing a good job as offensive coordinator? I think he's a lot better. I'm just going to hang up and listen to what you have to say, sir. Y'all have a good day.
All right,
thanks, Chris.
Is Chris
at the drag race?
Yeah, he's at the drag race. Where is he, man? Good Lord, a truck stop or something?
Testing out that new Hemi.
No, but wherever you're at, Chris, thank you for calling because you felt it was important. So you called, and we thank you for that as a station. You know, I think Tim's doing a good job. You know, again, I go back to missed opportunities. And this team has had a lot of missed opportunities. It's not because of the lack of him calling plays or calling design plays to get guys open. That's what we talked about last year. It seemed like there was no creativity. It seemed as if, you know, last year Downey wasn't ahead of the sticks. He was always seen to be playing two or three plays behind. But Tim Kelly, you don't get that. It's not perfect. But you don't get the feeling that he's chasing plays. You get a feeling that he's typically right on schedule or at times a little bit ahead. It's just, you know, the players when it comes down to it. You know, the execution of these plays, they have to be there. I can call up a million plays and they can, you know, I can look at this defense perfect and say, listen, I'm drawing up these 10 plays for these particular defenses, and they should work. And then, lo and behold, you get out in the game, you run that play against that defense, and it's wide open. He can't make them catch it. He can't make Ryan Tannehill throw a perfect ball. What he can do is design the perfect play, what we seem as the look at as the perfect play. That's all he can do. And Tim Kelly has done that. He's been creative outside the red zone as well. So, listen, is he the greatest coordinator in the world? No, but he's better than the last guy, and it seems like he's giving these guys opportunities to go out there and make plays. They just hadn't made them consistently. He's consistently called good games, but they haven't made plays or they haven't taken advantage of those plays consistently. That's the way I look at it.
I would agree. So it's almost like grading on a curve.
Exactly.
When you got that O-line.
Tough.
Adam in Portland is on the line with a question for Derek Mason about the quarterbacks. What's up, Adam?
Hey, Carolina. Hey, D-May. So yes. I'm the saltiest Titans fan in the world right now just because I feel like they kept Tanny like a year late, like a year too long. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking like $30 million, how many good pieces could you put around a young player for $30 million? So that's kind of where my head is going into this question. All right. So mm-hmm. have you seen, like, personally in your career, a young person come off the bench? I'm thinking Roethlisberger probably, because every time I go to ask somebody, do you think it's good for a young player to come in? They're like, do you want to lose? Because that's what's going to happen. I know for a fact that Ben Roethlisberger was not better than Tommy Maddox when they made the switch. And there's probably, I would say Lamar probably wasn't better than Flacco when they did the switch. But I'm thinking, like, has there ever been a moment with you as a veteran player that was like, all right, a rookie came in and lit a fire under everybody and give us something different? And I feel like the Titans like need a jolt, man. They need something different during the bye week. That's where I'm at. And I'm hoping that maybe you've seen something like that.
Thank you, Adam. I appreciate it. I mean, we had some success offensively, not team-wise, when Billy Volek came in. Now, Steve got hurt, and Billy came in. Willie, what was it, for like five games, somewhere around there, five, six games toward the end of the season?
Yeah, and maybe even a couple more. I'll have to go back. I've got it here. I'll pull it up.
Yeah,
because there was a time where you guys were red hot, scoring a lot of points, exactly. But giving up a lot of points
too, because the defense was riddled with injuries. But I would say Billy Volek, and I don't know if that was his first year or second year, but he still was a young quarterback. Billy Volek came in, and he gave us that spark. And from an offensive standpoint, we were scoring points. We were moving down the field. Everything seemed energized. It was just our defense was so depleted that we would score 30, but, we would give up 31. And I get it.
So this was 2004. Yes. Just to put it in sort of the perspective, the Steve McNair era, Steve McNair was the MVP, co-MVP with Peyton Manning in 2003. Mm-hmm. And you guys lost that really icy game. I shouldn't say icy, just bitterly cold game
in New England.
Mm-hmm. Great game. Could have gone either way. New England goes on and wins the Super Bowl. I really felt like maybe the winner of that game might have won the whole thing. The following year, McNair had the really bad sternum injury, and mm-hmm. it ended his season. And everything else was kind of crumbling at the edges there. So Billy Volek started the last eight. I don't know if it was the last eight games, but he started eight games. He threw for 18 touchdown passes.
Yeah.
So he was lighting it up.
He was on fire.
So he wasn't the problem.
Yeah, he wasn't the problem.
There were a lot of other problems.
We just had a defense. And then I look at Joe Flacco. You know, Joe gets drafted. Steve retires. Joe gets drafted. But Joe wasn't supposed to be the starter. It was supposed to be Troy Smith. Troy gets, the week, like 2 days before the game. Was it two or three games? I think it may have been 3 days before the game. Troy gets ill, like deathly ill. Like he has to go to the hospital. And he's in the hospital for, I think, a week, maybe a little bit longer. So Joe has to come in. And Joe never relinquished that quarterback, that starting quarterback spot. But Joe, what he did was he knew his place. He knew what he was coming into. And us as veteran guys knew that, hey, listen, we got to help Joe out. We can't make it feel as if Joe has to win games for us, even though there were a few he did. But for the most part, it was our defense is going to play great. We're going to do just enough on offense to whereas, the quarterback doesn't feel as if he has to win games for us. And throughout that whole season, I thought we started to build more and more confidence in Joe. Because he started to gain confidence. The more whether we won or lost, Joe gained confidence through that season. But, he had the players around him. The offensive line was pretty good. We had good receivers. We had a good running back. So he had a team around him that could help him grow. And only thing he need not do was mess it up. And he didn't. So those are the two examples that I had. One where a guy came in, maybe his second year, Billy Volek, and he lit it up from an offensive standpoint. But our defense was so bad. And then you have another guy, Joe comes in, rookie year. He's not lighting anything up, but he's gaining confidence each and every week, and we all see it.
Chol is on the line with a thought on Titans play calling. What's up, Chol?
My question, well, Dim, is I didn't see you playing because I'm a late boomer watching Tennessee Titans. But when you were playing, you tell Steve McNair how you like your ball because you are a smart player. Like, I listen to your talk and people talking about you and Steve and Chris, if I remember the name correctly. So why is it people like Kennel, if they're smart players, why can't they design their play if a play breaks down? And that's why Tom Brady became a best player. He was almost not drafted. But I go back to the players, and it's not about the coaches. Like you said, Harbour, my question, they cannot catch the ball if it's a design. People like Derrick Henry, if I'm Derrick, I say, okay, this is how I like my ball. I'm going to buy on outside. I'm not just jamming back in there because I don't have a good O-line to block. So why can't a player design their own play when they see they on the field?
Offensive coordinator slash wide receiver.
Thank you, Cho. I appreciate it.
Derrick Mason. Now, that would be awesome. D-Mace calls the plays.
Yeah, I don't want to do that Heimerdinger.
Pass it to me.
Neuheisel did that once. Well, Heimerdinger did it to me, too. He's like, Mace, here, you want to call the plays? Here, you call them.
We did hear that story.
The same thing. Yeah. It was like, nah, I just I want to complain about them. I don't want your job, believe me, because after the game, I'm back to my old self, and I know your job is hard. But in the midst of the game, everybody's tempers, you know, gets elevated just a little bit when things aren't going wrong, right. But he does make a point, Cho does, that, you know, it's not necessarily about calling your own plays. It's about what plays do you feel comfortable with. Every offensive coordinator and quarterback every week goes through this. Okay, tell me, give me your and because, you know, they would, you know, at times they would come to me and say, Mace, what three, four plays do you like? Okay, these are the three or four plays. All right. But the quarterback and the receiving quarterback and the quarterback's coach and offensive coordinator, I'm sure they, you know, it's like, okay, what plays do you feel comfortable with? You know, five or six plays. What plays do you feel comfortable with? Look at the chart. Tell me what plays you like. Tell me what plays you don't like as a quarterback. Because essentially, we just want things to work. What I may like as a coordinator and what you may like as a quarterback and what you feel comfortable with may be totally two different things. I have to make it comfortable for you so you can go out there and play your best football. So are players making up their own plays? No, they're not. But they have a say, especially the quarterback, have a say on which plays I like and which plays I don't like. Like quarterbacks can just say, listen, those five plays I do not like. I don't like them. Maybe we don't have the personnel for them. I just don't feel comfortable with them. And if you have a good offensive coordinator, he says, all right, we're going to take those plays out. But we got to be able to add more plays in because we got to have plays to run. So players are not making up their own plays, but the quarterback does have some freedom to say, hey, coach, that play I just don't feel comfortable with. And if you have a receiver like D-Hop, you can go to D-Hop and say, do you feel comfortable with these few plays right here? And he can say, nah, coach, I don't. You got another few, or here's a play. Here's some plays that I like. And then offensive coordinator say, okay, all right, as long as the quarterback, receiver, we're all on the same page, it's good. But as far as drawing up our own plays, nah, maybe Peyton Manning did it. Maybe Tom did it. Aaron did it. But there's not many that draw up their own plays. What they do is they look at all the 500 offensive plays we got, and they say, let's narrow it down to the plays that we run well, that we feel comfortable with.
I think it was last season when Kyler Murray was being such a crybaby about some of the plays that Cliff Kingsbury was calling, and he was saying, okay, if you think you're so good at it, why don't you call plays? So, Kyler Murray called plays for a Cardinals preseason game, and it was awful.
Yeah,
it was absolutely atrocious. And I think that was Cliff's way of saying, see?
What it boils down to, listen, you can call plays. That's Anybody can call a play. Just call whatever play you want.
Will it work?
But will it work? And are you calling it at the right time? Or do you know how the game is flowing?
Right.
That's what separates the good coordinators between the good ones and the great ones. They got a feel for what's going on.
Right back into your questions for D-Mace coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Ask D-Mace is presented by Calabria Pizza. Come try their pizza in Goodlettsville and Mount Juliet because life is just too short to eat bad pizza. Get those questions in for D-Mace because the best question for D-Mace will win a pair of tickets to see the Predators take on the San Jose Sharks on Saturday at Bridgestone Arena. Let's get back into your questions for D-Mace. Eric is on the line and has been waiting very patiently. What's up, Eric?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing today? It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Guys, D-Mace, I got a dad joke for you, and then I'm going to get to my question. I think you might get this one. What does a baseball team and a muffin have in common?
Baseball team and a musket?
A muffin.
A muffin. Oh.
Yeah.
Baseball team and a muffin. They both have catchers? I don't know.
No.
What muffin they both has a depend catcher?
I don't know.
They both depend on the batter.
I was close. I said catcher. It's the batter.
Yeah. Okay, my question is this, of course, and there's been talk, of course, the trade deadline is coming up, and this is a two-part question. And there's talk that the Titans are probably going to be sellers instead of buyers. You know, talk about Tannehill, of course, he got the ankle injury, so I don't know about that now. But, of course, there's Derrick Henry and DeAndre Hopkins. Do the Titans, as a football team, listen to other offensive teams? But here's the other question. Somebody brought this up. I kind of think the trade deadline is a little bit early. Wouldn't you think it'd be later in the season? Because I don't even think it's at the halfway point. Like, it should be at the earliest, maybe just before or after Thanksgiving. Just what are your thoughts on that about do they listen to also other teams? And also, don't you think the trade deadline should probably be a little bit later in the season? As always, good talk to you guys. Y'all take care. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Eric. And thank you, Eric. Yeah, I think the Titans should listen. You know, if teams are inquiring about specific players, I think as a GM head coach, you got to listen. Now, you may not act on it because what they're offering may be nothing. You know, well, maybe it's not worth giving up that player. Let's just say that. It's going to be something, but not worth giving up, you know, whatever player you're that they're calling about. So, yeah, unless, you know, you take the call and you listen, and if it's something that, you know, may work, then okay. But if it's something that, you know, as an organization, like, it's not going to work for us, then okay. Thank you, but no thank you, and you move on. But, you know, if you feel you're at a point, because Rand said it and Vrabel has said it, listen, we're always going to do something to try to make the team better. We're always looking to make the team better. So better to them in this situation could be, you know, trading a few of their guys. But you have to be able to get something of value back, pick, you know, some type of draft pick or something that's worthy of giving up those couple of guys. Now, in regards to the trade deadline, Willie brought that up the other day. Maybe it should be a little bit later in the football season because it seems like we're only, 2 months into the football season and already – we're not even 2 months, are we?
Think about
– close to 2 months and already the – I mean, the trade deadline is coming up.
Think about the – right about halfway. That week 8.
Yeah. Well, but if a lot of teams have a bye, then it's 7, and now you're playing 17 games.
Yeah.
I feel like it could be another week two or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Maybe even stretch it to 3. Think about the amount of time in baseball, hockey, basketball, where you have trade deadline shows. You have hours of coverage. You have weeks of coverage leading up to it of the rumors. And, hey, this team's shopping around for this position. This team's shopping around for that position. This team's a buyer. This team's a seller. That's exciting. That's good talk for the league. Mm-hmm. Football's never had that. No, name the last time you've seen a trade deadline show on the NFL.
Never hasn't, man.
Yeah.
Not that I know of.
Mm-mm.
Doesn't happen.
Well, maybe that's something that, because you know the NFL is calculated in everything they do.
The NFL makes a show out of
exactly.
Everything.
Maybe down the line.
It's not like they need it, right?
Yeah.
But that's not my point. But it would be exciting to actually have the ability to trade more players. Is it because it's just hard for X safety to come into another system and learn the system to be worth actually trading something for?
Yeah, because my thing is, like basketball, it's I'm not going to say it's easy to make a trade in the middle of the season, but I think because it's such an individualized sport.
There's just some blockbusters.
Okay, y'all trade.
Like
just
Kevin
shoot
Durant,
the ball.
Like, yeah. big names get traded in
just
basketball.
Shoot the ball and we'll figure everything out afterwards. Or maybe baseball, you know.
Right, where there's really no system.
Exactly.
That's the easiest one.
Exactly.
Right?
So I would think football and probably hockey would be the most difficult ones to try to, okay, if we, you know, have all these transactions during the trade deadline, it's like how then do our team, how quickly can our team sort of mesh with all of these, you know, different trades?
And even in hockey, the trade deadline's like 2/3 of the way through the season.
Yes.
Football, you're before halfway.
Yeah. It's a very different point in the season.
Telling y'all, it's very difficult for a football player to be traded in the middle of the season. Well, you know, during the season. Because I'm not even talking about moving your family, because you got to do that in every sport.
But it's hard to do.
But just learning, like, what's going on from a schematic standpoint and being able to, you know, fill in there. And then you got to build that rapport, you know, with one another. That communication is not a slap the light on and it's there. That communication happens over games, over seasons, years, you know, where I could look at Steve and Steve could look at me and we know exactly what's going on, where he wants the ball, where I want the ball. You can't, when you trade in the middle of the season, that's hard to replicate. It is, because you have no rapport with the quarterback, or the running back has no rapport with the offensive line. So maybe that's why you don't see a lot of blockbuster deals with NFL teams, because it's just so hard. One, possibly the money, but then two, it's just so hard to get that person acclimated.
Yeah,
you know, to a system. When I got traded to Houston, that was probably, I was like, okay, I can learn the offense, but I can't build a rapport with the quarterback in a week. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's hard to do.
Let's get into a couple more. Chris in Lewisburg, Texan, says, D-Mace, do you think that the Titans will be active before the trade deadline? And if so, who do you think they'll move?
I guess it depends on how they come out of this bye week and where they see this division at. Because I think Jacksonville's next game is at Pittsburgh, I believe, or San Fran, one of the two. And if they win a game, their next game, or Indianapolis wins their next game, and you lose to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. What are you thinking as a staff? What are you thinking as a organization? And do you think, and now your quarterback's injured, how long, when will he be back? One of your starting wide receivers is injured, when will he be back? So there's a lot of other factors that go into it. If they're a healthy team, then you may look at it differently. But right now they're not. So if you lose to Atlanta, you don't have your quarterback.
Jacksonville keeps winning.
Then what are you thinking as an organization?
Last one, Biff Texan says, do you believe that if Derrick Henry was used more by placing him in motion in the backfield, that it would open up the offense? I think if they pass the ball more to Derrick coming out of the backfield, that also would open things up. Tannehill overlooks Derrick a lot of times when Derrick clearly has a chance to gain positive yardage.
Derrick is just, what y'all got to understand, people, Derrick is just not a natural pass catcher.
He looks uncomfy catching the ball.
And I know, you know, the screen plays, everything he's catching are screens or swings, you know, swing routes. He's not getting exactly into the route combinations. Mm-hmm. He's catching, he's an outlet here, or he's the primary when you're running the screen. Catching a screen pass and a flare is totally different from being a primary receiver in the progression of the quarterback. So as much as, you know, as much as Ryan wants to get the – don't you think that Ryan, of all people on that team, Ryan knows how much Derrick Henry means and what he can do when he gets the ball in his hands?
Don't you think
he would try to throw the ball to him every time, or they would call pass plays for him every time? They can't, because he's just not a natural catcher of the ball. You know, if he does catch it, yeah, he's capable of doing something. But when you are a 50-50 catcher, that's not good in this league.
I think he has been better.
He's been better, but yet and still, it's
still not Alvin Kamara.
He can't. He's not. Well, let me say, I'm not going to say he can't. He hasn't shown that he's catch that he can catch anything outside of a screen or flare. Am I missing something? Am I right?
Yes. He does not run patterns. Yeah. And
I'm just telling you what I see.
He kind of run routes, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So
I think it's design screens. And he's become, to his credit, better at that.
Exactly. Absolutely.
And the team has become better at that with the screens and some of the design throws to him than they were years ago. But he still is not a guy that's going to go out and run a route like an Austin Eckler or McCaffrey, guys like that.
Ask D-Maze. Reminder, the best question for D-Maze will win a pair of tickets to see the Predators take on the San Jose Sharks this weekend. So, winner, we will be in touch. But coming up next, we'll continue our Titans report card. Because I think as a show, we have evaluated that we've seen Tim Kelly do some nice things offensively. But he's doesn't have a lot to work with. The execution of those plays that were drawn up hasn't been great. So we can't put that on Tim Kelly. It's not perfect. He doesn't get an A+. But the execution hasn't been great. Shane Bowen, on the other hand, can't use the same personnel excuse that maybe we could use for Tim Kelly. So we'll have our Titans report card, our evaluation of Shane Bowen coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, make your silly underdog picks for your chance to win weekly prizes. You can play at thegamenashville.com or the 1025 The Game app as we approach week 8 of college football and week 7 of the NFL. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket.
Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.